I wake up in the morning and I roll out of bed. I consider shaving, but there's too much face on my head. 'Cause my beard is a face hider. My beard hides my face. My beard is a face hider. My beard hides my face. There you go. There's your death cab beard face.
TBTM.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's Friday. Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Weekend.
It gets very specific. It's not quite nasal enough the way you're doing it, all right? You're not doing it the way he speaks. You're not doing it with the kind of... And you don't do the broken voice, but he gets very emotional. But he gets very emotional indeed. She was only 16 years old. She was only 16. You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
All right. I have no date. A 2-liter bottle of Shasta and my All Rush mixtape. Let's rock.
I can't contain myself. I can't contain my joy now. This is hella time.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome, everybody, to a Friday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
I'm so excited about this show. It is weird, it is beautiful, it has a plot that goes in fascinating directions.
My name is Luke Burbank, I am your host.
Peace and love.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. This is right where I was sitting yesterday when I did the show, but in the interim, I headed down to Portland, did Livewire, got up this morning, came back here. Before I got back here, encountered an incident in the airport in Portland that I found to be on the not-so-polite side. Guy conducting a full-on, like... video conference call from the waiting area, like before we got on the plane. I know that everybody's working for the weekend. We're all trying to do our jobs, but full on, like, I felt there was a quieter place he could have done it. Plus, I did not like the fact that he called himself a brand evangelist. He described himself as a brand evangelist to these people he was trying to sell some technobabble to, like a bunch of times. But now I'm here. And this is episode 2998 in a collector's series.
Let the fun begin.
And we are going to let the fun begin here on this Friday. Including a segment that I'm calling Yesterday's Coffee Today.
This song goes out to all the coffee lovers of the world.
A couple of news stories from this week that escaped our radar, including something that happened on the red carpet. I believe it might have technically been the purple carpet of the Emmys last Sunday. There was a moment of true bizarreness when the actor Terrence Howard was being interviewed.
And when he said that, that shocked me.
I want to play you the tape. It really blew my mind. Plus, we keep threatening to talk about it. And today, those threats, we're going to make good on them. Talk about the woman who ate too much wasabi.
I can't believe I ate that whole thing.
It's an actual recording of her right after she ate a big pile of wasabi she thought was avocado and what happened to her. Just want to make sure your weekend doesn't involve power eating wasabi because you might end up with what this woman ended up with. So that will happen. Plus, it's Friday, so we got music for your weekend. And we have this guy, the longest running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. We just wanted to be normal, but clearly he's not. He's Andrew
Fireball
Walsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. I just looked down at Twitter. Are you being cyberbullied, my friend? Are you being cyberbullied over your boat situations in the past?
No, you know what? I'm fine with it. It's okay. Everybody can have a little fun at the expense of old LB and his much-discussed boat-crashing ways. Somebody was pointing out on Twitter that there's a, like, Wendy's has floated a barge out by the, where the sail gating goes on before the Husky games, the Husky football games down there in Montlake. Because everything has to be hashtag viral and hashtag out of the box. Wendy's decided to do something like that. And then our friend the Stewbot, does this sound like a musical, Stewbot? He's checking in because apparently there's nothing going on at Surly at his job that he should be working at. So he's just bouncing around on the internet trying to go viral. And then somebody else said, so he put in an order for us, a request of food that we should get from the floating Wendy's. And then somebody says, does Luke even have any boats that don't have holes in them? And then I pretended to be angry. Where I said, hey, what the, but I wasn't really angry.
Yeah, you know, somebody else pointed out on that thread that I just looked at moments before I opened my microphone that that is actually the closest Wendy's to us right now. I don't know where the other person was tweeting from, but that is a little bit galling. Wendy's would be my number one fast food hamburger if there was one within the tri-state area. I have to drive like 15 minutes to get to a Wendy's, either way up north or way down south. Right now, the closest Wendy's to me, as this tweeter said, I need a kayak to get to it. And that seems like some sort of a torture.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Yeah, we've got one relatively close to us up here in the Bay City, but you are in a Wendy's desert.
I guess
there's one on Lake City Way that you could hit up.
Is there one on Lake City Way, though?
Yeah.
Is it still there for Shurzies?
Well, I mean, last time I drove through that part of town, there was we often talk on the show about the dearth of DQs, the ability of most Americans in major cities to both grill and chill has been severely curtailed. There's something about DQs in certain cities, although, again, we have one here in the Bay City, just down the hill. I talked on the show a month or two ago about how I was staring at it through through a telescope from my front porch. Which is just one of the worst Alfred Hitchcock movies ever. Mm-hmm. The guy is not laid up. He's just on his porch looking at a DQ grill and chill. But anyway, that's the one that in Seattle. There are none of them within the city limits of Seattle, which is so bizarre to me.
You know, you're right. This Wendy's that's in Lake City is actually only a 10-minute drive from me in moderate midday traffic on a Friday. It's 10 minutes. So that's not as bad as I thought. I think maybe every time I'm in the mood for a Wendy's, I'm like hustling and bustling from somewhere to somewhere. And so I'm looking for a quick meal. And somehow every time I have a lot of memories of being in my car and having my phone plugged into the central nervous system of the car and like trying to navigate my way to a Wendy's while I'm moving, which is kind of a dangerous game to play. I don't like messing around with computers when I'm behind the wheel. But I always feel like I'm always exactly 100 miles away from a Wendy's when I need one. And I use the word
you
need advisably. I like their hamburgers the best. The square hamburger is very salty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My little sister Sarah used to work at the Wendy's in Silverdale, Washington. And she had a whole special, like, she would make a special version of the chili that was off menu for herself.
Oh, what did she do to it?
I can't remember all of the dazzling deets, but I just remember it involving, like, a ton of onions and a ton. She would just like she would sort of like max out the volume on a couple of the accoutrements in some way that was like, you know, you couldn't really order it that way, or you'd have to know to order it, but it was some special thing that she would make. And now she owns a restaurant in Portland, so there you go. She was always she was always pushing the culinary boundaries. Let me, if I can, go back. Would you consider yourself, Andrew, a brand evangelist for TBTL?
Well, clearly for Wendy's.
Yeah, right.
I'm really literally evangelizing for Wendy's right now and their hamburgers.
They got some free pub at the top of the show. I was so put off by this guy next to me in the airport. I know this is the second Friday in a row where I get on the air and I've got a story of something that happened in the airport last week or a couple of weeks ago. It was a woman who was wearing a T-shirt that said, "I'm not a superwoman, but I'm a mortgage." Not even mortgage broker, but mortgage underwriter, so pretty close.
Yeah, underwriter, I think, yeah.
So clearly what happens is I get up, I go to the Portland airport, I fly home, and then my brain is full of memories of what happened to me in the Portland airport. Today it was this guy who I sit down next to him. It's whatever it is, 6:45 in the morning or something, and he's got the ear AirPods in or whatever, and he's staring at his laptop, and he's just going, "No, I can't. I can't. You guys can't hear me. You guys can't hear me. You guys." And then he'd wait for a while, and then he'd be like, "So you guys aren't? You're not hearing? You can't hear me?" And I was just like, "You gotta be flipping kidding me, bro!" Like, and then this was the spiel he starts on. He goes, "When they finally get, he's like, so you guys can all hear me? Okay, great. Well, I'm sorry to delay you guys. I'm not actually, this meeting wasn't on the calendar, so I didn't know about it. And I'm actually supposed to be on a plane right now. I'm in the airport, so sorry to delay everyone." And I was like, "If you're supposed to be on a plane right now, embrace that. Pretend you're on a plane and don't have this GD meeting where you're yelling into your jawbone technology, into your computer on video." And then he goes like, "Well, okay, I'm just going to save bandwidth here at the airport. I'm going to turn off the video function." I was like, phew, he's going to do that thing people do for meetings where they just like they need to be on a call, but they're somewhere where it's not convenient. So they call in and then they just mute themselves and they just kind of hang in the background. And like that's something we've all done. That's something that happens, you know, on the occasion. Nope. He then proceeded to try to – I could not figure out the nature of the relationship. If he was being pitched to, if he was pitching his company to these people, I just know that he kept calling himself, "I'm CMO." I don't know what CMO even means. I'm CMO and brand evangelist. And then he
– Chief like, marketing operator from, is CMO.
Oh, there you go. There you go. And then he was like – again, I don't know why you need to say it. 4 minutes later, I assume, it's like me doing a rejoin on TBTL. No one new has joined the call. Like, why do you need to mention you're a brand evangelist again 4 minutes later into the call? I'm not lying. I joked on Twitter he did it 8 times. He at least 4 times called himself a brand evangelist. And what I thought was funny was when I put that on Twitter, mostly just as a coping mechanism because I was annoyed to be sitting next to this guy. It seemed to really resonate with people. I guess it's why that long hair businessman skit resonates with people. There is a certain kind of corporate speak that is just so regrettable. And I think brand evangelist is right up there at the top.
Something's bothering me. I think it would be chief marketing officer. I think I said operator, maybe like when you're done with your job for the day as a brand ambassador and then you go out on the town and you try to mingle because you're single, then maybe you become an operator, a chief marketing operator. But I think during the day, you're a chief marketing officer. I don't know.
Operator, could you help me evangelize this brand? That's a song that Jim Croce wrote about that.
Peter, Bjorn, and John again. I was going to say, yeah, I don't know what's going on with our culture because I feel like we're in a place now where more and more people think it's okay just to have loud business meetings or any kind of conversations on their phone no matter where they are, even if they're in a restaurant and there's a portly, balding, bearded guy trying to eat his burrito near you. That guy's me. Like, I don't want to hear you talking really loudly about your brand evangelism or about your dog and how he has to go to the vet. Like, just like have those kind of, if I am in a public place and I have to take a phone call, I get up and I move to, usually I will go outside and like I'm a smoker, like I used to be, you know what I mean? Like I will go someplace where it's okay to have a loud conversation, not just like kind of eat my salad loudly and have a conversation because I think that this restaurant is an extension of my living room or my dining room or my divving room. So anyway, we're in a culture where that seems to be at the same time more accepted, yet also, like you said, you posted something on Twitter and people seem to really gravitate towards it. Although it sounds like the people on Twitter were more kind of backing you up as far as like terrible corporate speak as opposed to just rudeness.
The interaction seemed to be based around the term brand evangelist because I think everybody's heard that. For me, that word is very loaded, as I wrote in my tweet, looking forward to the altar call. I grew up with actual evangelists for parents. Oh. So brand evangelist always just feels like, okay. Mm-hmm. But like, to evangelize is just, it is what it is as a word. But yeah, like, I was thinking, like, what are the other ways this guy could have handled this? And I mean, I guess maybe he was worried about missing his flight. But again, it's like, if you're worried about missing your flight, don't get in on the call. Because if you're going to have to leave the call abruptly to get to your flight, like, the only reason he needed to be sitting in that area was if he was worried that his flight was going to board and leave without him. Otherwise, there are plenty of nooks and crannies in the Portland in you know, whatever you call it, in the A-gates of the Portland airport. There are plenty of places you can go hide out and do this. Also, I mean, look, he worked for some technology company, allegedly. Oh, that was the other thing. He was like, he was listing all the companies that his company bought and how they were all failing companies. And he goes, you might call us an island of misfit toys, but we don't like to think about it that way. And I was like, bro, work on your sales pitch. You just started by saying that your company is made up of things that have failed. You're calling yourself an island of misfit toys?
And then you're saying, like, we don't like to think of ourselves that way. Although I got to say, I can't throw any stones on that one because that's like every sentence I say on this show, I realize. I did it a lot too, this actually. Week. I was struggling a lot this week, I feel like, with words. And I cannot tell you how many times I said, well, I probably shouldn't say this, or, well, this is an interesting story, or I don't know if this is going to go anywhere, but, and so I'm the first one to undercut me when I'm about to say something.
I just kept thinking, like, you work in tech, or, I mean, I'm sure he works for some company that, like, literally facilitates these kinds of meetings in some way. Just figure out a way to do it on your cell phone, not your computer, so that you can be mobile, so that you can walk to an area where there are less people. And then if people come over to the area where you are, then move somewhere else. That's how you do that. You dial in. I'm sure that whatever, you know, go-to meeting he was using, by the way, shout out to go-to meeting. Who are all of the companies that are getting free plugs today? Let's list them later in the newsletter. No, but it's like, I just felt like there was, he was operating like he was also, like, I don't know why I'm being so mean on my friends who have iPads, but it was the version of, like, you know, someone taking a picture with an iPad where I'm like, I think there's a better technological answer to this. With him, it was like, you don't need to be sitting there staring at your giant laptop screen to have this meeting that you're also then just not even, like, you're logging out of the video function. Like, I wanted him to be more mobile, more flexible, and more able to be not next to me is really what I wanted to happen.
Right. Yeah, I mean, in a certain way, and I'm really trying to put myself in his position a little bit because I'm thinking, okay, somebody, let's say he really isn't a really important part of this meeting. It sounds like he's leading this meeting. Maybe he's got prospective clients on the line. He can't totally blow it off because that'd be really bad. Let's say he's losing, you know, a huge account or something if he's not doing this. So he's kind of between a rock and a hard place. People have family emergencies, obviously. People have work emergencies. I think that we can cut them some slack if it seems that way. And it does seem like this guy kind of found himself in a tough position one way or another, whether it's his fault. But I am thinking, like you say, once you decide, hey, I'm not going to make this a video call anymore, then just switch it to your phone and you can just go have that phone call anywhere. Like, I have done that before. I found myself, oh, shoot, I was supposed to be somewhere. Like, literally, I was picking up our buddy P. Fletch for lunch several months ago. And on the way to her place, my phone buzzed, reminding me that I was missing a marketing meeting with our buddy Brandon and the gang down in St. Paul. And, like, I was like, ah, shit. But, you know, I didn't make that anybody else's problem. Well, I guess Phyllis is to a degree because I told her I was going to be a little bit late. But I pulled over and I had that conversation. And, you know, if I'm him, God, that sucks. But you got to lead the meeting. But you're vocal only at this point. Put it on your phone, and like you say, go find a corner somewhere. Although, like I say, this guy, aside from being a somewhat annoying brand ambassador, I still say this is somewhat
evangelist,
is still somewhat better than somebody who's just like killing time at lunch, having a loud call because they don't want to be bored with their thoughts for the 20 minutes it's going to take them to eat their super burrito deconstructed into a salad.
Yeah, that's so. Hey, you know what? That feels like a shot at me deconstructing a burrito.
No,
into
I just
a
think
salad.
That that's more people eat that at. I was just trying to. What do you call it in Chipotle? A bowl. I couldn't think of the word bowl. You're not gonna. This isn't an interesting story, but I couldn't think of the word bowl.
I probably shouldn't say this, but what do you call that thing that holds other things? Ooh,
anyway.
The talk is getting hot right here on a Friday. Okay, let's take a quick break and then we come back. I want to play you this audio that I actually heard driving home today from between Everett and the Bay City that was really quite something. I hope you haven't heard it yet. Are you familiar with this?
No, I'm not familiar with
Good.
This story. Yeah,
I'd like you to experience it with fresh ears. So we'll do that coming up on TBTL. Don't go anywhere.
marketing officer. No, ma'am. Yeah. I'm a chief marketing operator.
And I'm the smoothest. I'm Madeline Barron. This season of In the Dark, we solve the mystery of when Sade became Sade. I swear to God we were calling her Sade. I'm sure we were just saying it wrong. But and then there was a Sade. I feel like there's maybe that's just a regional. Maybe that's a Utica thing.
I thought she was Sade. I thought that's how you say your name, Sade.
No? Well, you could be right. When I was a kid, it could have just been the radio DJ I was listening to, like, just looked at the album cover, saw S-A-D-E, mm-hmm. and was like, how do we say that?
Sade.
But he was always Sade.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, people were calling, again, you know, people from the Pacific Northwest, not the hotbed of pronouncing Sha. And then it became Sade, and then I heard Sade.
Yeah, I thought it was Sade. Here's my deal with it is I don't think I had any conversations about her until the Sade revelation. I think when I was a kid, I probably looked at the name and just thought it was Sade or something along those lines. But then I remember thinking, Sade, how do you get there? But then just accepting it.
Sure. That's a tricky R. If it is Sade, I know this sounds crazy. The memory of me learning that her name was not pronounced Sade was I feel like the entertainer Sinbad was involved, and I don't know if she was being interviewed by Sinbad. I have a very vivid memory in my mind. And by the way, TBTL Hive Mind, I don't know how you would ever find this, but if you guys have ever combed or scoured the internet for me, this is the time. If anyone can find Sinbad introducing Sade, I swear that was when I learned her name was being pronounced Sade.
I am wrong. Okay, this is interesting, I think. First of all, I laughed at Sinbad because isn't there another – there's that Sinbad movie that was never made that is now an example of when
like – The Mandela effect?
The Mandela effect, exactly, when the culture – just somehow there's some sort of mass delusion where we all
– I think what it is people think
something.
That they – they remember the movie Shazam starring Shaquille O'Neal, and I think people think Sinbad was in a movie where he played a genie, and he wasn't.
But there's also the thing about the Berenstain Bears, right? That it's not actually, it's the Berenstain Bears, not the Berenstain Bears, and we all thought it
was. So but that, Sinbad was one of the Berenstain
Bears. No, that is true. But anyway, more to the point of what you're saying here, David Turner, writing for Track Record, which looks like it might have been one of those Gawker sites. At least it has the same kind of layout. Have you been mispronouncing Sade's name? Is how I would say that. Mm. That was on. This was written on the. This was written on October of 2017, and apparently a big article in the New York Times declared that Sade is back, blah, blah, blah. A funny aside from, oh my God, the name of the person who wrote the New York Times piece is Bernstein, by the way, the Bernstein Bear.
Whoa.
Centers on the
is
fact
that... Is it the equinox? What's going on? My mind exploding.
According to the Bernstein Bears, Americans have struggled to properly pronounce...
Now that's interesting.
...the name. Here's the quote from the New York Times. Much of the current fascination with Sade, or Sade, derives from the fact that her fans know so little about her, starting with the pronunciation of her name. Many believe it's pronounced Sade, but it is Sade.
Ah,
you've been Sade. Right. I knew it. I'm thinking the same thing.
Hey,
you're
sorry,
absolutely
you know
right. It's not Sade.
I have to lean into my brand. Sade.
You're a brand evangelist for yourself. Sade it is. You're totally right, and I've learned something. Which
who
is to never disagree with you again.
Who put the R in the Sade? Why? That must be one of those things where just it's like a – it really is a regional thing where like people will say of course, I'm not going to think of a good example, but there are parts of the country where people will put R's into things. People have even been known to say Washington at times, but I don't think of it as a Northwest thing.
Yeah.
There's like a there's a kind of a – like there's definitely parts of the country where the mysterious R's will show up. So it's Sade, but at some point this mysterious R got inserted in there.
Yeah, because, I mean, you think of New England and, like, Maine with those extra R's being thrown around.
Right.
But I also had family growing up kind of in West Virginia, and they were like my chuchas, right, my aunts, mm-hmm. and they would say washcloth. Go upstairs, grab a washcloth.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, now I'm on a different site. This is actually Pitchfork. It says it's pronounced Worcester.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Hey, let's see here. Can we do? Can we thank our Sade level?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
What's Sade's number two hit?
Let me
you
see.
Got Smooth Operator.
Wow. Well, according to Spotify, Smooth Operator is coming in at number. No, yeah. Okay, number one. But what about By Your Side?
Let's hear it.
This is a steep drop off.
Do you know that Wikipedia says that Sade is worth 50 million pounds? Like, because I think she lives in the UK.
Oh.
So, whatever that is, $70 million US? Talk about a smooth operator.
Yeah. I mean, I think worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's thank our smooth operator level donors of the day. These folks are making the show possible today with their donations. Gail Floyd of Kirkwood, Missouri. Wait a hot minute. I'm going to Missouri in a few weeks. I'm going to Hamilton, Missouri, to the quilting capital of the world. Not really, but to this town that had its whole economy turned around through quilting, Andrew.
Really?
And that's not even for a TV story. It's just for fun. It's just for me.
Oh, really? I forgot
that
you're
really into quilting. I'm quilting all my food now. It's a new thing I'm trying. So I will be in Missouri. I don't know how far that is from Kirkwood, but Gail, thank you for donating. Rodney Anderson of San Antonio, Texas. Thank you. Also, Lori Hope of Everett, Washington. Linda Mills of Seattle, Washington. Alicia and Dan Schaefer of Seattle, Washington. And then Allison Walker of Essex Junction, Vermont.
Well, that seems fancy.
Yeah, it does. You can get here from there. If you're classy, Essex Junction, Vermont. Allison, Alicia and Dan, Linda, Lori, Rodney, and Gail. Thank you so much for supporting TBTL. This sounds like Everything But the Girl, by the way. Darling, I'll bring you home. Is this her collaborating with Tracy Thorne from Everything But the Girl?
I don't know. Let me look up. This is called By Your Side.
I'm hearing some heavy duty Everything But the Girl lady singing with her vibrations. Anyway,
I'm not getting that, but I'll let you know.
All right. Well, thanks for donating, everybody. We really appreciate it. We would not be here just like hipping you guys
side.
To the proper pronunciation. Yeah, By Your Side. Telling you that it's Sade, not Sade. We would not be here doing that without all of you. So thank you so much. Thanks for supporting the show. Did we just fall in love, Andrew? Did you and I just fall in love?
I definitely am. I fell in love with something, but I thought it was the song, not you. No offense.
Well, let's leave things open before we launch out on this big journey. Yet another big journey together.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Which could kind of be a top story. We can't spend too much time on this, but we are. I mean, this is the last recording for six shows where we will be in our respective kind of home studios. I'm just here in a little studio. We're about to hit the road. On Sunday, we're flying to Orlando, doing shows there, doing shows in New York, coming flying back to Seattle. I guess we will on Friday of next week, a week from today, we'll be back at your house doing a show. But basically, we got a bunch of flights and road shows coming up. How are you feeling, my friend?
I am feeling weird, man. A couple of things.
Really?
First of all, for me, this trip also marks the end of kind of a lot of things being on the calendar. And I always hesitate to say that because then I can't help but compare myself to you and what your calendar looks like, doing live shows all over the place and CBS stories and then non-CBS stories, just you checking out quilting factories, yeah, et cetera.
Of course.
But, you know, you're always on the go and doing things. But, like, for me, this was kind of a busy 2 months, I think, going back mm-hmm. to the beginning of doing the Thing Festival. Didn't we do something? Did we have an event before the Thing Festival, too? Why do I feel like we did, too? Oh,
we
no.
We did the Thing Festival, and then we had the – what were you going
to
say?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's right. It started with the Thing Festival, then hopping on a plane immediately after that to go to the Midwest, to Minnesota, where we did a live show yes. there and had a bunch of other things going on there. Then to come back and immediately on the heels of that do the TBTL listener picnic, which, by the way, all of these things went really well. They were tons of fun. None of them were like completely overwhelming, but it was just a lot of things in a row. I'm not shy to say that also I had my parents visit on the calendar for a long time. I love my parents, but I think anybody with a family knows that that can, you know, add some anxiety when you see that on the calendar. Like, how can I entertain out of town guests? Will they think my apartment is clean enough? Will they still love me? Mm-hmm. All of those things.
Tomorrow.
Right. And then, you know, that was last weekend or 2 weekends ago. And now this tour was kind of the final thing. And then after this, I'm wondering, first of all, if come October 5th, I'm almost going to have like a phantom limb kind of situation. Like, I remember sometimes in college I would have so much anxiety to get to the end of the semester, and then you take all of the tests and all the projects are done and you can't wait for it all to be over, and then it's over and you sort of don't know what you have, sort of an empty feeling. I don't know what it's going to be like because I don't have anything else on the calendar after this. So that's one thing on my mind. And secondly, as we prepared to board planes, I guess I'm leaving super early Sunday morning to go to Florida. I almost feel like I'm forgetting something. Like, usually I have this long to-do list of all these things I got to get done. I don't know if it's just because we have 3 different shows and there's so much to do that it sort of feels like a whitewash and I don't even know where to begin, or if we're in good shape and I'm just anxious because I don't know what to be anxious about.
I would say I think it's probably door number 2. Like, let's see here. I want to be careful with how I say the next few words because I don't want to sound like I'm giving you grief or anything. But I think I have observed at times when you and I are doing things where there's just like a lot to be stressed about, like legitimately a lot to be stressed about. There will be times where what it'll feel like happens is we'll solve one problem and then your brain will just start scanning for what the next problem is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so as to get the next problem solved, you know what I mean? This is a stress response. But I think absent any like specific thing to be stressed about, you're probably just feeling generally anxious. I actually am too. It's weird because like I have today and all of tomorrow. I don't fly out till Sunday. For me, that's usually like a lifetime. Like under normal circumstances, I wouldn't even start thinking about whatever was going to happen on Monday night, right? I wouldn't even start thinking about that until late Monday night. You know, it would just be, I'd be like, I got all the time in the world. But I really, this morning when I got up in Portland, I was coming home, I was like, I got a lot of shit to do. And it's like, I actually don't have a ton of specific things to do. I just am on high alert right now mm-hmm. because yeah. of all of the unknown. So I'm feeling it too. And I am usually less, I feel that stuff less than you do. So I get why you're stressed, but I think your brain is just, your brain is just a scanner right now, and it's just going, it's just scanning, 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 and if it can't fix on anything, it's going to just keep going until it can fix on something, because then it's at least engaged with a problem.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that there are still some technical questions about how we're going to set things up at the Waffle House, but there's nothing I can do about that right now. Everything, mm-hmm. you know, like our boy Eric the Viking Stromstead from APM yep. has shipped, I think I already said this on the show, an 80-pound package full of electronics to the hotel we're staying at. That should be waiting for me there. I can start learning how to use it once I'm there, but there's nothing I can do now. You know, I guess I got to do a little bit of, you know, finalizing of the door lists and stuff, but that's a very small thing. It just sort of feels like I should be doing so much more prep work right now, but I can't think of what else to prep. I think we're in pretty good shape for all 3 of these shows. But by saying that, by saying those words, I'm jinxing the hell out of it.
Hmm. Yeah, I think it's going to go well. I think here's what I told myself. And you want to talk about lowered expectations. I think you get worried about the gear not working or not being able to upload the show. And I mean, obviously you want the show to go well too, but I think that I think where I get stressed out about what we're doing is the moment of being on stage talking into the microphones. Probably it's a luxury because you handle so much of the tech stuff now that I have the great luxury of mostly just being worried about the actual sort of product. But like what I'm telling myself is so that I don't get super anxious, because I'm like, we're going to do a show at a Waffle House, a show in Brooklyn, and a show on a boat. And those are all – the Brooklyn show is the least probably sort of adventurous in that it's in a traditional venue where they do this kind of stuff. But the other two shows are really like, you know, they're very – like it's unclear to me how they're going to go. And what I've been telling myself to manage my anxiety is all the listeners want is one moment of joy from each of those events. So like – I don't know if we're going to be able to crush it for an hour to an hour and a half in terms of the actual show, the actual talking, you and I, the jokes that we make to each other, if the audience is going to be sitting there in the Waffle House just like, OMG, this is great, or if they're going to be a little bit more like just observing us, or like even thinking about the show we did at the State Fair. That was a fun show. I was really psyched we got to do that, actually. I feel like that was kind of a cool sort of unexpected little moment of us getting to really – be a part of a huge cultural event in Minnesota. But it was like, you know, we had those headsets on. Everybody was kind of far away. It was unclear to me how it was going. And when I start to get that feeling during a recording, like, is this working or not? Mm-hmm. Like, I get stressed out. But I have to remind myself, when I listen to a radio show or if I go to an event, if I have one moment of real genuine joy, if one joke really makes me laugh, that's what I remember later. I don't remember the 59 minutes that were basically, you know, like the standard that I hold myself to when I'm stressing out is that every minute of what we do has to be engaging, which if you listen to this show, it's crazy that that's what I'm thinking because of how much we don't achieve that, including in this very conversation. But what I have to tell myself to relax is, look, if we just have a nice time and if there's one thing that people remember later, that's enough. That's fine. And that just helps me feel less stressed out, because the idea of us being totally engaging for the audience in a Waffle House or in Brooklyn or on a boat for the whole time we're doing the show, that stresses me out.
And when you look at these shows, like, all we have to do is a 15-minute show in each location, and I think we can keep people
– yeah.
That's the plan, right? We do 15 minutes – can we do 15?
I was minutes? Thinking of like a tight 10.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to do a loose 15 or a tight 10?
Let's do a loose 15. I'll handle the loose part. You do the 15 part. Anyway, okay. I am looking forward to it, though. Like, I like talking about this stuff because I am kind of in a weird mental space right now. But I honestly do think that it's going to be a memorable three shows for everybody who's coming out. And I really do know that, like, so far of all the things that I listed, that these, you know, various activities we've done this late summer and early fall, they've all been positive things. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm not looking past it, but I do have a general kind of anxiety about making sure everything goes well. I mean, three live shows in 1 week in some interesting locations is a new thing for me.
I think what's going to happen is that there will be some issues, and that will end up actually creating moments that are memorable. I think what I was just trying to say and not really putting good words to it was what I do. My anxiety around this stuff is to try to carefully kind of curate and plan every single second of the show, mm-hmm. so that there's no chance that there'll be an unexpected moment which could go badly. And that's just like the idea that by the time we get to Seattle on Friday and by the time we're on that boat, it's just going to be – we're just going to be kind of like, you know, we're going to be kind of worn out. And we may get a little goofy, and that's actually probably fine. Like it's like, you know, I'm sure that our goofiest, slappiest shows are ones that people tend to remember and enjoy. And I'm doing so much to try to make sure that doesn't happen, because I don't think of that as good broadcasting. So like there's going to probably be some mess ups, and those mess ups will probably be actually the best part because they'll be genuine.
Yeah, it's funny. I think you and I have very different kind of memories of the show we did after our 24-hour marathon, or I guess in the last hour of our 24-hour marathon at Rebar. By the way, we never talked about that. Did you hear about this? It looks like the block that Rebar is on is getting sold, and the future of Rebar is very shaky right now. Another Seattle institution. Mm. We didn't talk about that. Did you happen to see that?
I didn't know that, but I can't say I'm surprised. A one-story building that houses a bar, and I think there's like a corned beef. Mm-hmm. There's like a corned beef sandwich place next to it. I mean, I'm not trying to be glib, but I guess I'm not super surprised that that's happening.
Right, exactly. I mean, I was amazed that it had withstood as much as it had, but yeah. Somebody had told me that it's because there's one person, I believe a woman owns a piece of property on the block, and that she said that she would never let it go. But now, if I understand it correctly, what happened was the other businesses are somehow just going to work
killed her.
Yeah. People have accidents all the time. My understanding is that they're just like saying, fine, we're not waiting for you anymore. We're going to develop what we can around you. That's my understanding of an article I read in The Stranger a month ago. So I'm not sure if I'm getting all the details right. But
they're
really
trying to, Edith Macefield.
Is she the person who had the little house? It was that in Ballard?
Yeah, she's the famous, they call it the up house in Ballard, where she refused to sell, and her little teeny tiny house, they just mm-hmm. built around it, which is, I mean, such, I'm sorry, I'm going to use a bad word here, such a dick move, because that house, if you've seen it, it is like, it goes from being like a cute little bungalow in Ballard to just being something that lives in a giant cement hole where no natural light can ever penetrate, you know, because they built like five stories up all around her.
Yeah.
Anyway.
By the way, just so that I have this right, I am looking at the Stranger article now. This is, it looks like the manager, I think, or maybe the owner of Rebar, saying, I mean, we saw the writing on the wall. Originally, Diamond Parking, that's who owns the rest of the lot and wants to sell it, said that they were going to wait for Nicole Stone to sell her building so they could get the whole corner, but they just decided that they didn't want to deal with it anymore. So it sounds like,
oh yeah, Diamond Parking, noted good guys,
right? Exactly. And again, I know like that there's absolutely a reality of we need density and we need those things, but it is kind of sad. Like, that is a historic place, and Nirvana had their historic CD launch party for Nevermind there, which they got kicked out of their own CD launch party, which I was always impressed by. And also TBTL celebrated their 10-year anniversary there. And anyway, to go back to that, is I have such a fond memory of that show. And even though we'd been up for so long, I actually felt very clear-headed during it and had a good time. And I thought that I was really on, and the crowd was into it, and we were very close to the crowd, which was nice. And I just have such a good feeling about that show. And when I ask you about it, you're like, I don't know what happened during that show. All I know is I was off and it wasn't good.
No. That's not
that
my,
not that it wasn't good, but I thought that you felt like you did not turn in a good performance.
I just don't remember anything from the show. I honestly didn't even have a bad. I just. It's weird when one realizes one was on stage talking, making sounds with one's mouth for an hour or whatever, and you have zero memory of it.
Right.
So everybody seemed very happy afterwards. So I didn't think that I mean, unless I should be worried, did I mess up? I don't know. I don't remember it. You tell me. Okay, fine. Let's just talk about Terrence Howard right now. So I heard this tape when I was driving. I heard this tape on the Howard Stern show, so I want to give them credit. But I had no idea this has gone down. I don't know how this had gone down. I don't know how we didn't hear more about this. So the Emmys were, you know, last Sunday. I don't care about the Emmys very much for whatever reason. I don't know. Maybe you've put your evil inside me, Andrew. I just don't care about award shows as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. Or because you kind of notoriously don't have a lot of interest in them. And I think I used to – I think I still kind of watch the Oscars, but it's not an event for me any longer. But – so maybe that's part of how I missed this. Terrence Howard, the actor from Empire – has said, I guess, that he's going to retire after the show is over. And he's coming down the red carpet for the Emmys because he's probably nominated or something. You know, Empire's a big hit show. Just another one of my Burbank stone cold locks. I said Empire was going to be a hugely successful program, and it was.
Are you being sarcastic? That's not true. Did you say the opposite?
Yes. Yeah, totally. I just thought it looked so bad to me. Like, I kept seeing ads for it during the football game, and I was like, nobody's going to watch that shit.
Wow.
It just looks telenovela to me. I don't know. I just feel like it's not the kind of show that I would go out for, but it is extremely popular. Yeah. So I'm, of course, I'm out of step with the American television viewing public. But anyway, Terrence Howard, who has had a whole host of issues in his personal life that, you know, caveat emptor. Putting all that into evidence, but also putting it to the side for a moment, he comes down the carpet, and he's being interviewed by just like, I think it's KTLA. I mean, there is just nothing I like less than the banter between these, like, you know, people on the red carpet and the stars, when the red carpet people are acting super enthused, which is, of course, what's happening here, they ask Terrence Howard about his possible retirement, and he just takes it to a place that I was absolutely not expecting.
In the house. Terrence Howard here. You
first of all, I hate it when people say in the house. It's one of my least favorite. He's like, they're I don't
outside.
Know what.
They're not even in a building.
I don't know what Terrence. I forget what. Let's see. What's that? Lucius, I think, is the name of Terrence Howard's character on Empire. And this guy is like, Lucius is in the house. Cool. Okay. Whatever. But fine. Let's just listen to this.
Lucius is in the house. Terrence Howard here. You made huge headlines when you said, after you complete these 15 episodes of Empire, you got to walk away for a while or forever.
For good. I mean, everyone keeps trying to tell me, don't say it's forever. But I've spent 37 years pretending to be people so that people can pretend to watch and enjoy what I'm doing when I've made some discoveries in my own personal life.
What would you guess those discoveries are, Andrew, having not heard this tape?
First of all, he misspoke there when he says when people pretend to watch, right? He says I'm pretending to be
other people.
So that people can pretend to watch.
No, I as you hear the rest of this tape, that will be the least crazy thing that he says. I think he probably – well, I couldn't begin to try to guess the mind of Terrence Howard, but my guess is that he thinks that people don't actually care about things like Empire as much as they pretend to care about them.
Really? Okay.
I think he finds this world to be fairly illusory. But he says he's had some pretty major discoveries in his personal life. What would the nature of the – I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but
he
like,
has a secret
guess,
baby. He found out that he has a baby from his past who's now 16 years old and he wants to get to know this child.
That's actually probably actually a plot from an episode of Empire, but no, that is not.
Damn.
It is not the discovery that he has made. He has discovered something on a much bigger level.
With the science that, you know, Pythagoras was searching for, I was able to open up the flower of life properly and find the real wave conjugations that we've been looking for 10,000 years. Why would I continue, you know, walking on water for tips when I've got an entire generation to teach a whole new world?
What?
That's a big remark. Yeah. What do you intend to do?
Well, let me put it this way. All energy in the universe is expressed in motion. All motion is expressed in waves. All waves are curved. So where does the straight lines come from to make the platonic solids? There are no straight lines. So when I took the flower of life and opened it properly, I found whole new wave conjugations that expose the in-between spaces. It's the thing that holds us all together. I'm sharing that. On Tuesday, when I receive my star, I'm going to be able to prove that gravity is only an effect and not a force.
This is happening, Andrew.
What is the hell? Reach for comment. Tom Cruise said, stay in your lane, sir.
Yeah, exactly.
Let us hold, over here in the giant blue
hold
building.
Hold my e-meter.
Wow.
Yeah,
what is
all I
happening?
Can say is, wow. Yeah.
I receive my star. I'm going to be able to prove that gravity is only an effect and not a force. I'm putting something on YouTube where I will build the planet Saturn without gravity and build the Milky Way galaxy without gravity.
Wow. Did you also say you're getting your star
out? Yeah.
On the walk of
on the walk of
downshift this.
She's trying to steer it back. She's like, well, let's get this back onto some ground that I'm comfortable with and the viewers can follow, which is
could you say jam and bagel bites really quick?
When I'm jamming out, I like to eat bagel bites. Wow, that is something else. So
right?
We missed this. Now I guess, like you say, it's not surprising that I don't follow a lot of Emmy news, but I feel like this should have been a bigger deal.
Yes.
Maybe it is. I shouldn't say that. Maybe it should have been a bigger deal in my life.
No, it was actually – it was because then I went to find the audio today. I was in the car and I was like, oh, this is very up our alley. And then I was going to find the audio and there was not as much chatter about this as I was expecting because it is just not your garden variety. You know, you had Jim Carrey doing kind of – I think we eventually decided it's sort of a bit of a jerk move. As little respect as I have for the craft of standing on the red carpet and interviewing these celebrities, like that's not I've done it before and it was very soul crushing for me. I mean, very briefly, I did it at an event and it did not make me feel good about myself. But I think where we ultimately landed with the Jim Carrey thing, do you remember that, was it was kind of a mean – it was sort of not nice because you're sort of punching down. Someone's there trying to do their job, and he was just being all weird.
Yeah.
But it's like he's not – he's in on the joke, and he's doing it – he thinks he's being funny, and he's just putting somebody in a really impossible position. Terrence Howard is 100% convinced that he has figured out – some sort of mathematical principle that no one has been able to figure out for 10,000 years. Like, he is going to build something on YouTube where he's going to build Saturn without gravity. I don't have any idea what that looks like or what it means. I don't actually, you know, because this tape is almost a week old now, I don't know if he got his star on the Walk of Fame, but that is one Hollywood Walk of Fame ceremony that I would 100% watch.
Right? I'm trying to pull up every article. I'm sorry. I am now honestly trying to pull up every article I can about this, and there just is not that much. I got one thing on 2fab.com. I got one thing on Adweek. KTLA interview with actor Terrence Howard goes viral. I would say not viral enough. I got something from the UK Daily Mail. You know, that
for some reason, when I imagine you pulling up these articles, you're Tom Cruise in Minority Reporting it. You're just sliding these articles around with your hands, trying to get the information, trying to understand the information in the offices of Walsh, Welsh, and Dormat.
That's exactly what's going on here. I'm minimizing things. I'm making swooshing gestures and sounds. But it just is not – this isn't blowing up enough, especially for a guy who is on a show that is such a huge hit. Now, I know that Empire has cooled down a little bit in the years since it started, but, you know, the first two seasons, it seems like it was what everybody was talking about. Highbrow friends loved it. Lowbrow friends loved it. It seemed like everybody was just there for the over-the-top drama, and it was – you know, I didn't get into it, but I kind of liked the fact that everybody was into it. But yeah, for such a high-profile guy to just go, I mean in a certain way, like, I mean, if he's – well, listen, he's not exactly the best guy in the world, like you alluded to.
Sure.
Either I also don't love, you know, kind of wallowing in people when they're struggling with something, and we're all
seem to be struggling.
Guess I mean, but something's broken in his brain, right? Like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, is it – it's like, I mean, I don't think that he has actually solved something that, like, Pythagoras couldn't solve.
Okay.
That – my guess is that he hasn't. But I also don't know if it's – I mean, listen, talk about the Goldwater rule. I can't – I'm not even a psychiatrist, so I really can't diagnose people from afar. But, like, it's also possible that he – Terrence Howard has just had so much success with acting, and with when he puts, you know, his mind towards something, decides he wants to do it, you know, he became a very well-compensated, famous actor. And he's had problems in his personal life, but that clearly has not that has not made it impossible for him to continue being very successful in the world of acting. He's, you know, regularly probably nominated for Emmys and other awards. Like, he may just think that he's special. And that, what, you know, he is the guy that can do this. And that's, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know if that's – I mean, is that a mental illness, or is he just very cocky?
Yeah, I don't know. What I would love – yeah, and by the way, going back to the Jim Carrey thing you mentioned before too, like, I had no worries about him, or like, he just – he seemed like, yeah, he was half crazy, but also just acting crazy. And I don't know. The whole thing just, like, really – I found that to be so distasteful and annoying. I really hated that. This, I'm just more, I think, sort of transfixed by, because it is so bizarre. Now I'm looking at, okay, now with some other search terms, whoosh, whoosh, I'm finding write-ups on The Root and some other publications I'm more familiar with. But I'm not finding any goddamn follow-ups. Journalists, do your job. Get a follow-up interview. Start with, what the hell, Terrence? What's going on? Explain this again. Like, I just don't understand how there isn't a long tail on this thing.
Right. And also, I mean, is it possible that he has actually figured out that gravity is – what did he say?
It's the thing that holds us all together. I'm sharing that. On Tuesday, when I receive my star, I'm going to be able to prove that gravity is only an effect and not a force.
I mean, is it possible he's right?
I love that, though. That
I know, that's
and
great,
that
too.
She picked up on that. I actually really am impressed with that woman to just grab onto, you know, that star and swing.
Yeah.
I'm putting something on YouTube where I will build
YouTube, noted home of things that are not crazy.
Right. The planet Saturn without gravity and built the Milky Way galaxy without gravity.
Did you also say you're getting your star?
Yeah.
On the Walk of
Fame. On the Walk of Fame.
Give that woman a raise.
How am I getting a star when I've never, for TV, when I've never received an Emmy nomination for TV?
Oh, I guess he hasn't been nominated.
You're a presenter tonight. You can do whatever you want when you stand in front of that microphone. What are you going to do?
I have no idea. I'm just being honest and looking at it. You know, I would think an Emmy nomination would come first.
Wow, hey, so at the end,
what was
just
it like working with Will Smith in Kung Fu Panda 2?
I like the fact that, so this is also sort of rooted in like when he said at the beginning, so people can pretend to watch, and now we're kind of bookended with this, oh, I've been snubbed for my Emmy. The fact that this is all, this crazy talk is somewhat rooted in feeling like he's been passed over is interesting.
I guess it's kind of funny because that seems, look, if you're rewriting the laws of gravity, it seems like whether or not you've been nominated for an Emmy has moved way down the list of concerns. Like that's, I promise you, no one will be talking about Empire in 1,000 years. But if you figured out that gravity is an effect and not a force, that's going to be at the top of your Wikipedia page. I promise you. But also, can I just say this? Like, I appreciate the radical honesty. Like you hear this little moment in Terrence Howard's voice where it's like he kind of understands that he's laying it out here. Like, which I kind of appreciate.
What are you gonna do?
I have no idea. I'm just being honest and looking at it. You know, I would think an Emmy nomination.
Now maybe he's being honest, he means he's talking about the fact that he thinks it's BS that he's getting a star on the Walk of Fame before he's getting an Emmy nomination. But I feel like something about him just being that real, because what bothers me so much about these red carpet affairs is how not real they generally are. And that's what gives me kind of an uncomfortable feeling, even in my days of really liking watching the Oscars and having little, you know, get togethers or whatnot. We used to do shows where we would do Oscar previews and we'd play music and eat and stuff. It was really fun, actually. Even in those days, the red carpet thing just made me cringe because of the phoniness of all of the talk. So you got to give Terrence Howard credit. This is not a phony conversation.
No. I mean, God damn it. You want to get me into award ceremonies? More of this.
Yeah, more of this. Yeah. Maybe. I mean, also, God, what if he was right? What are the implications then?
that gravity doesn't exist. That gravity is just a construct, and he's going to create. He's going to create a planet, and he's going to recreate the Milky Way on YouTube, not using gravity. Did I hear that correctly?
I don't understand what I'm going to build Saturn without gravity on YouTube. I don't really understand what that means. And it sounded like his contention was that. It's that gravity is it's an effect, not a force. So gravity, I think he's trying to say gravity happens because of something else. Gravity itself is not what we think of it as being. I mean, I don't know, but I'm very curious. Again, were this Britney Spears shaving her head in public, that's something that felt like this is a person who's dealing with a mental health crisis. Mm-hmm. This feels kind of like this is a guy who's very convinced that he's figured something out. And I don't know why it feels different to me, but, you know, I don't think he's right. But I salute him making this red carpet event way more interesting and genuine.
And I was really ready to tear into the KTLA journalist, but I'm not being sarcastic when I say kudos to that woman for just like trying to find something to. And again, like maybe we're enjoying hearing him go off the rails, but like as far as somebody just trying to stay focused on her job in a moment that could feel panicky, I'm really impressed with that.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because there is a. I'll see if I can just find this now on the kind of fly. But basically, the video that's going around, the KTLA video, is a very, if I could say, sort of TBTL-ish kind of thing. It's basically all of the anchors that were involved with the actual interview playing the tape and kind of debriefing from the studio. So what I can actually do is play for you that correspondent from KTLA kind of trying to analyze her own performance. So if you can imagine this, it's like the people that were involved in the original thing in the studio now at KTLA watching the video again and kind of BSing about it.
When I've never received an Emmy nomination for TV.
You're a presenter tonight. You can do whatever you want when you stand in front of that microphone. What are you going to do?
I have no idea. I'm just being honest and looking at it. You know, I would think an Emmy nomination would come first.
Well, there you are.
I tried to change it.
Right. Aren't you getting a star?
He's rebuilding the universe. Yes, you go, well, you're getting a star. Sir.
So, again, I think that will be an even more widely attended cover.
By the way, the female anchor is just, like, laughing hysterically. So I guess that wasn't great audio. But I think what it is that this is the, like, local KTLA news staff. So they get dispatched to that. And then this is the next day or whatever when they're doing their regular jobs. Now, what's kind of funny is I watched this video earlier, and I kind of had no patience for, like, the male anchors and them being all, like, you know, laughing at, like, Terrence Howard's craziness. But that's basically what we did.
Yeah.
But I like it when we do it, and I don't like it when those guys do it.
That little tiny bit of tape you even just played there, I kind of liked them. They seem sort of – I don't know. I guess I don't have a lot – you know, no offense to anybody listening, but I guess I don't hold entertainment reporters on local stations, even in LA, in the highest esteem often. But honestly, I kind of like their reaction to it. It seems very human and nursing. I was trying. I was out there trying.
Yeah, I thought that they did a good job. I honestly thought in the moment, like what the guy says is after Terrence Howard does the whole spiel, he says, like, that's a heavy revelation or something. Here, let me just play a little bit more of this.
You know, Pythagoras was searching for. I was able to open up the flower of life properly and find the real wave conjugations that we've been looking for 10,000 years. Why would I continue, you know, walking on water for tips when I've got an entire generation to teach a whole new world?
That's a big remark. What do you intend to do?
That's a big remark.
That's a perfect conversation. We had a perfect conversation.
A perfect conversation. Yeah, that's a big remark. I mean, I got to give the guy credit for not just warging out during that and just going like, okay, tell me what's going to happen in upcoming on Empire.
You're right.
You know, are you and Taraji P. Henson going to finally get back together? Like, because I could have also seen that happening. Like, honestly, there are probably examples of this where, like, in these kinds of conversations, the person who's being interviewed says something that is just utterly not what you expect, and the person interviewing them is so much thinking about their next question or is being talked to in their ear that they just go right into the next thing. So at least to the credit of this KTLA crew, he had the wherewithal to say, that's a big remark.
I agree. Yeah, no, cheers to this crew, and in a certain way, cheers to Terrence Howard for getting me interested in the Emmys.
Yeah. Absolutely. A 6-year-old Israeli woman went to the emergency room complaining of chest pains recently. Doctors found out that she was suffering from something called broken heart syndrome as the result of eating a gigantic – actually, I guess it was about a teaspoon of wasabi at a wedding. She thought it was avocado. Broken heart syndrome is basically when you get dysfunction in a ventricle of your heart. The official name for it is actually Takotsubo cardiomyopathy. Where basically it's a result of sudden stress, such as the death of a loved one or intense fear in a situation. So, Andrew, I don't know. This could happen at some point right before we start the show at the Waffle House. The lower part of the left ventricle in the heart, which is the main source of pumping blood through the body, balloons during contractions. Doctors typically use beta blockers, which slow down heart rate. The broken heart syndrome typically occurs in women aged 58 to 75. About 5% of most women evaluated for heart attack usually have the reversible disorder. Mm. 2 days after the woman was admitted, images showed her heart was beating and pumping normally, and so she's back to being, I guess, okay. By the way, this was a Washington Post article, Letitia Beecham writing this. You know what my takeaway from this was? First of all, I've definitely eaten that much wasabi before on a dare in college, and it was not fun. Also, I don't like to think about my heart beating because it stresses me out that it's going to stop. Like, just the thought that there is this ventricle that's like a balloon blowing up and then going down and blowing up and then going down, and that's just been happening my whole life. Mm-hmm. And it's just – I've just got to hope that it just keeps doing it. That freaks me out.
It just seems very vulnerable to you when you think about it. Yeah.
Yes.
I hadn't really thought about it. I'm trying to get freaked out now, but no, I'm pretty good
not
with
working.
It. Like I got all.
What
kinds
if I tell you that Terrence Howard holds the key to the universe?
What if he holds the gravity key to my heart?
Yeah, he does.
But yeah, no, I mean, I kind of accept the fact that I'm just kind of a sack of juices and organs that could explode at any moment. By the way, you're not sitting next to me on the plane, are you? Because that sounds like a
intentionally
messy situation if that does happen.
Yeah.
And I think that we did talk about this on the show before, but my big takeaway was that it's just a reminder that I've probably never had real wasabi ever in my life. I'm eating this blend of horseradish and mustard extract and green food coloring that we often use in the West here because wasabi is so hard to grow. This article mentions that, but I think we talked about this on the show for some other reason a while back, and that was
but you know what? I'd forgotten that. So did she does the article indicate that she ate like more legit wasabi? Because that's funny. So what I ate in college on a dare was probably not real wasabi.
Yes, I am looking here for some reason because I read this like several days ago. Somehow I took away that she probably ate a more pure version of wasabi. Let's see. Did this take place in Israel? I don't know what the I don't know what the access to pure wasabi is.
Real wasabi is.
Right. But I do think that for most of us who eat, you know, just like wasabi with, you know, a little dollop of it next to our sushi, I wonder if I've ever been to a place that's authentic enough to serve real wasabi.
Let me tell you that regardless of if it's the real stuff or whatever we consume over here and call wasabi, my relationship with it is always like I do the thing where, you know, you smush it in some soy sauce and you stir it all up. And me eating wasabi is either like, oh, I didn't get any in that bite, or that is way too much.
Yeah, sure.
I've never been like, that's the right amount of wasabi.
Yeah.
It's either like, phooey, I got one. There's no wasabi, or my nose will never be okay again.
Yeah. I didn't know about the mixing. Well, also, I was very late to sushi, you might expect.
Me too.
I never had it before. You know, I remember applying for my first job in, you know, kind of after college, and that was at New Hampshire Public Radio. And that's in, you know, Concord, especially then. I don't know what it's like these days, but it's a small town, right? And it feels like a small town, and there's not a lot of like nice restaurants to go to. And of course, these are public radio people, so they care about food way more than I do, especially at this point in my life. I'm just kind of leaving college. You think that I'm kind of a picky eater or a non-adventurous eater now, which I'm not. You should have met me right out of college. Like, I didn't eat hardly anything. Like, it's just like a very kind of sheltered Ohio kid. And I think that when people in Concord, New Hampshire want to maybe impress people or have kind of a business lunch, they want to go to someplace better than the Friendlies next door, right? So they took me to a sushi place, and I remember being very uncomfortable and not ordering sushi and like finding the one non-sushi thing on the menu and just feeling like very, very much like a kid who is in over his head with these people. One of the producers on the show actually used to be a professional chef on yachts, by the way. So anyway, but it was during that time in Concord where I lived for, I think, 8 years or something like that. Sometime after that original meeting I had there, I eventually did try eating sushi in Concord, New Hampshire. They say if you're going to eat sushi once in your life, you should do it in Concord, New Hampshire. And once I did finally try it, I ended up falling in love with it. I think I also fell in love with the mixed drinks at this place. It was like they had like kind of tiki drinks, and I was like, what is this Mai Tai, and can I live here now? So anyway, I fell in love with the whole experience, and that's when I started eating sushi, you know, in my early 20s, and I would just glob the wasabi right on top there. Then Genevieve, I think, taught me, well, you can mix it in with the soy sauce. So I do that at first now so I can seem like a gentleman, but that's just not enough. So usually I start by putting the wasabi in the soy sauce, dipping my first roll or something in there, and then just going back to like piling it on top.
It's funny because the first time, maybe one of the first times I had, I don't even know if it was really sushi, but it was probably bento box, which involved using chopsticks and stuff. It was with, it was at a job interview for my first job in radio too, working on that conservative morning talk show. This guy, it was a restaurant that was in the ground floor of under the Westin in Seattle. Mm. And not there's a Trader Vic's there, but it was not the Trader Vic's. It was some other small thing. And I remember going there and getting miso soup and just thinking, this is awful. Who would ever consume this? Now, like, if I could just have an IV of miso soup at all times, I would. It's like one of my favorite things on earth.
So salty. And,
but I remember trying to, like, you know, be cool. And this guy gave me a quiz on, like, Congress, which I failed miserably. Like, he literally had a quiz he was giving me in the interview because he wanted to make sure that I was going to be a – tells you how hard up they were for producers.
Because you got the job.
I failed the quiz. Yeah, he still hired me, even though I completely failed at the quiz. Mostly I was probably just trying to pick things up with chopsticks and seem like I knew what I was doing.
I have so many, like, heart-stopping moments in interviews because, again, I'm just – and as people are learning, you know, I'm not the brightest pancake in the stack, as the famous, famous saying goes.
I think you've proved your point there. That right, may be begging the question. I'm not even sure.
No, but I don't know. I definitely loved the world of public radio, but I got into it not because I grew up with a keen news sense or hunger for covering the news, but I liked kind of communication. I liked the medium of radio more. So there were a lot of times when I was like being interviewed by people who were real news heads. And also just people who knew the world around them. I remember one heart-stopping moment that even now telling it, I'm breaking out into a little bit of sweat. I was applying for a job in Boise, Idaho, which by the time I got to this part in the interview, I knew I wasn't going to be taking this job even if they offered it to me. I think I've told this story before. The moment I landed in Boise, New Hampshire called me and offered me the job, and I accepted it. So I knew it was kind of like when there's an offsides call on a football
play.
I basically had a free play with this interview, and I kind of wanted – it was also a weird – without extending this too much, I've told you this before, but it was also a weird situation where they told me if I was offered the job but then declined it, they were going to make me pay for my own plane ticket retroactively, which was something I was very upset about at the time, but it didn't matter because I didn't get the job. And one of the things that they asked me was – it wasn't even an interview question.
That was the terms that the public radio station in Boise said to you, if we fly you out here and then we offer the job and then you say no – you owe us for the plane ticket?
Yes, and I remember being informed enough to be
a rinky-dink operator.
Right. I remember feeling appalled by that, but also too young to really challenge it. And but then I landed and then I didn't care. Like, I had some uncomfortable, like, nice shoes I could have worn for all the interviews, but then I landed. I was offered the job in New Hampshire. I knew I didn't want this one, so I just wore my stupid steel-toed boots to the interview, which I used to wear everywhere. I don't know why I wore steel-toed boots. I was an idiot. But
Why is it an idiot to wear steel-toed boots?
Because I wasn't – I just wore them because my friend Tony wore steel-toed boots. Like, a steel-toed boot is like if you're working on a – you know, I mean, I had steel-toed boots that I actually wore for work, but these were my nice steel-toed boots. Like, why would I fly wearing steel-toed boots? Like, why would anybody choose to wear steel-toed boots?
I'm sure you couldn't get on the plane with them now, probably.
Right. I mean, you have to take off your shoes. So anyway, I just think of how young and stupid I was, yet I felt like an adult. But I remember walking with the guy, just walking and talking like a West Wing, and he just kind of mentioned something. He's like, oh, yeah, Ohio, right. That's what's directly to the west of Ohio? And I was like, oh, yeah, Illinois, Indiana. My mother, my sister, Illinois, Indiana. Like, I just remember, like, somehow, like, just totally fumbling that, and I don't even know what words were coming out of my mouth because my heart, my little bubbly heart was racing so fast, and there's so much adrenaline going through me, and I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know if this is like a sly interview question or if we're just talking here, but I really don't know what state borders my state, and I'm applying. I believe this was a news job of some sort, so...
The good news is that you were forgetful like a fox who didn't want to have to pay for his travel. Because, you know, had you hit that one out of the park, they would have been like, we got to get that young man in steel-toed boots. He's really got something.
Right.
They would have offered you the job. You would have turned it down, and then they would have been like, well, now you owe us $600. And then, I don't know, would you have paid it?
I don't know what I would have done, but I remember getting a little, I mean, I did a lot of things kind of wrong. One thing that I did that I knew I was doing wrong, but I didn't care, was I kind of like, so the guy who was interviewing me would have been my boss, probably the news director. But then his boss, who was like the general manager, the big manager of the entire station, I remember kind of getting into it with him a little bit. Like, I don't know what era this is. I guess I shouldn't say too much about him because it might be somebody that one of our listeners knows, considering that it's a public radio family here. But I don't remember being super impressed by him. He seemed like the type of guy who would just say things that sounded right as the head of an organization, but didn't really seem to back it up. Like, I remember meeting him moments after kind of seeing the central nervous system of this radio station. And the big part of the radio station was that it was almost all shows from the outside that were being repackaged mm-hmm. and presented to their audience, and there was very little local coverage. And I just have a vague memory of him kind of saying how dedicated they are to local coverage. I'm being like, but the proof isn't in the pudding. Like, you guys are obviously putting all of your resources into bringing in all kinds of content from outside, not local coverage. And I remember like kind of going back and forth with him and me thinking in my head, this isn't how interviews go. You don't challenge your boss's boss or your potential boss's boss in an interview. But I remember just kind of being appalled because I was such a public radio Boy Scout then, and I was so married to the mission of serving your audience, and I didn't feel like they were really serving their audience that well at that time. I could be totally wrong, but I just remember at the time being kind of appalled by, like, you're saying this one thing, but look behind you at this bank of computers. I don't think you're fulfilling what you say you're fulfilling.
See, that's actually that shows me that you were thinking about this. You were playing three-dimensional chess already at that point, because right. I would have had none of those things. I would have been like, I want these people to like me. I will reflect back to them. I mean, I wanted to get this job. This is a story that I know I've told before on the show. There was a point at which, after I'd been a work study student, worked in radio and ran through all of my hours. Like, I would get at the beginning of a quarter at the UW, they would allot me, I don't know, let's say 100 work study hours. It would be basically like, the idea was it was a part-time job.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the way work study, for the five listeners that don't know, the way it works is that it's basically a form of financial aid. I don't even know who it is. I don't know if it's the federal government or the state, but somebody kind of subsidizes half of the salary of the work you're doing so that the place will hire you, whatever it is, in this case the radio station, because they don't have to pay the full amount of money for you to be there. But so what I would do is I would, in like 3 weeks or a month, burn through the entire quarter's worth of hours, because I was just like, oh, that amount of money is X. I need to get that right now, because I was just always super broke. And so after that was gone, I was like, well, what else am I going to do? So one of the things I did was I tried to get a job working at this very early internet radio thing called The Dial, which was like, you know, they were ahead of their time in that they realized that people would listen to stuff on the internet. The problem was the internet was not in 1997. The internet was not ready for this. People didn't have good, reliable service. It wasn't fast enough. People were at that point not like – it just wasn't set up for it. But they were trying to run this thing. They had gotten some money. And I had to do this like – I was going to try to be like one of their sports people or something. And I had to prepare this kind of punchy sports report. And I – you know, Guy Nelson actually from KUOW got me in because he was working there. And did me a favor and got me an interview. And I did my little audition tape, and I tried to be funny. I tried to basically be like an ESPN Sports Center anchor, but doing it on the radio. And I did not think what I did was that bad. But man, the guy that I played it for told me, he was like, not only was it bad, not only are you not getting the job, this is one of the worst things I've ever heard.
Oh my
he was
God.
Almost like personally offended at my audition tape.
Wow. Do you think, was he trying to tell you this, though, in a way of like saying like you like kind of trying to be helpful? Or do you think that he was just astounded by how bad it was and he couldn't keep his mouth shut?
Well, it was weird because I remember this particular guy being not way older than me. Like, I feel like I would have been like 20 or 21, and he must have been like 25. And I don't know if he just was threatened by me, or if he thought I had a disrespectful demeanor, or if he just – I mean, I was told these are going to be like 1.5-minute sports updates, and they want them to have personality. So I'm sure the jokes were horrible, but it was a lot of me probably – a lot, honestly, just trying to channel my version of being like Kenny Mayne from SportsCenter or one of those guys, Dan Patrick, being kind of like, you know, saying kind of, I don't know what, just like clever, sly things about things that happened. Or maybe it was, unfortunately, it was probably more Dennis Miller than Kenny Mayne, which is not good. Kind of like, hockey, you know, who's playing that these days, babe? You know, like, I'm sure that the audition tape was utter shit. But the way this guy, this was in person, by the way. I remember going to the place where this was. First of all, I remember writing this whole audition thing out. At KUOW, of course, like in a studio. This is back when they were on the UW campus, writing out this whole thing I was going to do. And then mixing it, you know, recording it, getting the music right, putting it together on DigiCart. I remember using, you know, like it was a whole thing I did. And then going in to meet with the guy to get his feedback, and he just destroyed me. But even in that moment, I didn't have the wherewithal to be like, oh, by the way, what you guys are doing sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, at least when you were walking through that radio station that was going to charge you for your own airfare, at least you had the presence of mind to actually go like, yeah, the larger mission of this is not being served, or it's not operating the way you say it's operating. I never had that thought anywhere I went for a job ever until probably 5 years ago. And I was always just like, please like me.
I'm not on trial here, so I don't feel like I necessarily should have to say this. But I do want to, for people who are in the know, I do want to acknowledge that, yes, it is the format of almost every public radio station, that the vast majority of programming comes from things that you purchase from outside, that is coming from the network or some sort of network distributed thing. I mean, that's what American Public Media does as well. But so I don't remember exactly what it was. It was something kind of specific as to what this guy was saying, but then talking about his future plans of, I believe, even like bringing something in at the expense of a local show going away. I'm looking at their schedule right now because this is where I'm taking the conversation. They do have, sure. If you look at their schedule, they do have something called Idaho Matters, Monday through Friday at noon and rebroadcast at 8 p.m. That's really good. Unfortunately, when you click on it on their website, it takes you to Here and Now, which is a different show out of Boston. So that's not so great. But anyway, I'm not dumping on Idaho Public Broadcasting. I just didn't have – for some reason, I just walked into this guy's office and just kind of did not like the vibe, sort of. And for some reason,
you also,
with my steel-toed boots and my cocky Ohio public radio knowledge, felt like you're saying things and you're blowing smoke and I don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm taking my talents
Ohio,
to Concord.
Which famously borders Indiana, Illinois, Indiana. My mother, sure. My sister, exactly. My mother, my sister. I'm also just trying to imagine you, not that I don't want to spin you out any further, but I can't believe that you were eating sushi on a job interview in Concord. You didn't.
No. When they took me there, I ordered the one thing that wasn't sushi on the menu, which was probably chicken teriyaki. Yeah. It was later at that same restaurant, though, maybe a year or two later. I mean, again, not tons of places to go back then in Concord, so my friends would often gravitate back towards there, and that's where I eventually tried sushi. And
because I was like, man, you have the boldness of a much younger Andrew.
Yeah, right. Well, I was a much younger Andrew, but yeah, no, that I wasn't going to try sushi for the first time on a job interview. All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
You can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right. I think we've covered probably enough.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, I guess I would say for a week of programming. Let's wrap things up here with a little music for your weekend. Do you want to start things off?
Sure,
Andrew,
sure.
Actually, you know what?
No, hey, you want to go first?
Well, is your song Are you praying to the old or new gods of music for your weekend?
I'm gonna play Our Town by Iris DeMent. Why?
Are you serious?
No, I'm just joking. I'm trying to step on you.
I'm just thinking because I'm suggesting an older song, which is having its 20-year anniversary tomorrow. Mm-hmm. The listener song is also a blast from the past. So if
okay,
you
I have a brand new song, newer, where do you want it to go?
Beauty. So then I'll start.
Okay.
We're going to make it a new song sandwich.
Okay, an old gods sandwich.
Yeah, we're going to put new songs in old wine skins. This is not going to be good. I'll start with, I get this email. I've talked about it before. I'm a big John Prine fan, and I at some point bought some John Prine-related stuff as a gift for someone, and it put me into the John Prine verse. And if the tens of listeners can appreciate this, because a couple times a year you'll get emails from us that are, we hope anyway, interesting to you and seem personal. I get those from John Prine. And every time I get an email from John Prine, I freak out because I think John Prine is emailing me finally. And it's from his record label, Oh Boy Records. But anyway, Oh Boy Records, a.k.a. John Prine, informed me today that tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of the album In Spite of Ourselves,
wow.
Which 99. I am a big fan of this song. I've played it many times on the show, but, you know, I will find any excuse to do it. So my Music for Your Weekend selection is going to be John Prine and Iris DeMent doing this song In Spite of Ourselves, which is very long. We can't play all of it, but maybe just here's a little sample for those of you who might be unfamiliar.
She don't like her eggs all runny. She thinks crossing her legs is funny. She looks down her nose at money. She gets it on like the Easter Bunny. She's my baby, I'm her honey. I'm never gonna let her go.
He ain't got laid in a month of Sundays. Caught him once and he was sniffing my undies. He ain't too sharp, but he gets things done. Drinks his beer like it's oxygen. But he's my baby and I'm his honey. Never gonna let him go.
In spite of ourselves, we'll end up sitting on a rainbow. Against all odds, honey, we're the big door prize. We're gonna spike our noses right off of our faces. There won't be nothing but big old hearts dancing in our eyes.
All right, there's about 8 more minutes of that.
No, it's only on Spotify, it's a 3.5-minute song.
Really?
Yeah.
It just feels like there's so many, feels to me like there's just, I don't know, maybe it's just because the song's not in any rush or something. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I love that song. I probably listen to that song at least once a week, so maybe you're unfamiliar. Turns 20 tomorrow.
I remember playing this, speaking of going back and public radio stories of old, I worked on a folk show at Kent State University. I guess this would have been before that job interview. And we had producers who would work one night a week with this guy, Jim Bloom. And this came out in 99, which would have been about the time I was working at that. And he loved this song so much. And I fell in love with Iris DeMent during that period, too, because of, like, Our Town and
Can
stuff.
I try to... This is going to end poorly. Can I try to guess at some of the names for the folk show?
You can, except it didn't have one. Sorry to...
What?
It was just called... I'm pretty sure it was just the folk show with Jim Bloom, I think.
Oh. It wasn't called, like, Strings and Things?
No. He gave us all nicknames, though. It was the most kind of, like, live... It was a classical music station... And no, I'm sorry. It was a classic rock station. No, it was a classical music station and news station. But then on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights, you
public
had
public radio classic rock station. I'm Terry Gross. It's time to get the lead out.
Break Off the Knob, brought to you by the Break Off the Knob and Lock It In Foundation. I don't even know
time,
where I was going with it.
Time. Time for a Rolling Stones rock block. I'm Jack Spear.
But like a lot of our jobs there as students was to go in and kind of play CDs and then play the talk breaks that go in between them off of a computer during the night shifts, during the classical music shifts. But on the weekend nights, it was kind of a raucous scene in there. It was usually Jim, who was kind of a, you know, we were students. He was an adult, but he was kind of this frazzled kind of like, oh, he's making decisions at the last minute and driving us crazy. And just kind of like, and just, it had this very manic, fun energy. And we always loved working with him, even though, you know, I was not necessarily into folk music, but it did introduce me to a lot of stuff that I enjoyed. And I have very fond memories. He gave us all nicknames that he would torture us with. And I was Can Do Andrew, in case you're curious about that.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a fond, fond, fond memory. All right, now it's my turn to play something
for
you.
This better be the newest.
This is.
Shiniest. This better still have that little plastic coating on it that I'm going to pull off later.
I think it's. I think it must be 2019 or certainly 2018. I'm calling it up here, which is why I'm hesitating. But this is a musician named Chelsea Jade, who I don't think has ever come up on the show before. But it's kind of, I think you'll like it, kind of trancy pop, electronic pop. Genevieve recommended this to me because she went to see a show in Seattle recently. I can't remember who the headliner was, but she really liked Chelsea Jade. This woman is from New Zealand by way of South Africa, I believe, and is now living in Los Angeles and making this type of pop music. I love the name of this song. It's Ride or Cry.
Oh, yeah.
Nice, right? Song of the summery, I think.
Yeah, I could listen to this whilst floating in a swimming pool.
Right.
I dig it.
So Chelsea Jade is the name. Chelsea Jade.
All right. From New Zealand. Has been described as New Zealand's accidental dream pop hero. I was actually considered New Zealand's accidental dream pop hero until Chelsea stole the crown, which was not appreciated by me. All right. The... listener suggestion will bring us to the end of our broadcast week. It's from listener April. Hi there. Big Star always gives me that late summer, early fall feeling, and I think this song, September Girls, is perfect for the first full weekend in September. Obviously, we got this email a little while ago, but I think it still holds. I forget about this song for about 11 months, and then I remember it in September, and then I'm always reminded of what a great song it is. Feels very fall-like to me, very September-y, as listener April mentions. So that's what we're going to play, and that's going to bring us to the end of the week. So thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of TBTL. We will see some of you in Orlando on Monday, Lord willing. And the Iranian airspace don't stop us.
Right.
We'll be there. We'll be at the Waffle House. So we'll see all y'all then. And the rest of you, enjoy your weekend. Please remember, no mountain too tall. Oh, also, by the way, go Seahawks, go Browns. Go Mariners. Are they still doing that thing called baseball?
Mm-hmm.
We'll see you on Monday. Please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
power out.